You know, because if they see that there is so much compassion at home, then they know that their parents relate to them, especially the mother. So she will, teenage girl especially, would feel like talking, and she would then, ask the parent to listen to them. And therefore, this mother who wants to talk to her, whatever she be doing at that time, she should leave. Of course, apart from the other things that are so wajib, like prayer and everything. But true, of course, yeah, at that time, she should, capture that moment and...
Also helps remove the barrier, because sometimes those barriers are built between the parents and children, because the teenagers feel like the parents just don't understand them.
Yes.
They don't respect their, boundaries and etc. So,
and why do they think that their friends do? It's because their friends do active listening.
Mm.
They're so eager, and they are so willing to listen.
True.
And they share those sorrows with them also. So they know that there's a listening ear, and the best is the parent if she gives that listening ear. And mostly parents do that, but sometimes it happens so that the parents forget about this thing. They don't capture themselves as being young, day. One day all of us, the parents, were also young, and they don't know how it feels to be in the skin of a young person.
Very true.
They forget about it.
And I think sometimes parents resort to giving solutions straight away, or they judge them, or the teenagers feel judged. And
yes,
usually
yes,
from their friends,
absolutely,
they feel like, okay, now they understand.
Yes,
me.
They don't judge them, exactly. So this is one part of active listening.
Yeah.
And then we talked about positive, being positive. Always look at the bright side of things.
Yeah.
If we are so much negative ourselves, then the child will take that negative energy and feel more sorrowful over what matter they are maybe, feeling sad over.
True.
So however much at home we are supposed to be positive, to bring that positive nature about it, like, what a good day I had today, such and such good thing happened. Maybe, for example, we did a good thing in the morning, and then we enjoyed our breakfast. When we went, we saw this, and we admired the beauty of the nature, or whatever be it, some things that need to be mostly pumped in, to the youth, that to bring about that positive nature at home.
True.
It's very important.
I think the vibe is very important.
Yes, the vibe.
So we'll just take a quick break and pick up shortly.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
This is IRIB English Radio, and we have been discussing about one of the questions that had been previously asked about a mother worried about her 15-year-old daughter who doesn't talk about her problems to her mother anymore. And you gave some very informative lessons in how to deal with the teenagers. So did you want to expand on those?
Yes. Another way to open up a conversation with her teenage daughter is maybe focus on their interests. This is very important that, when a person is interested in something and probably you are not, you shouldn't, forego that as something that, or take it for granted.
Yeah.
For example, if your daughter is interested in crafts work or maybe some creativity or artwork or cooking or, anything, reading. So know that subject as, take it seriously. I guess when a parent is really caring, it happens.
Yeah.
That when a parent is caring, they see even the boy's interest or the girl's interest, and they search on that. and they want to see more on that, maybe documentaries or read about it, and then talk to them about it. Yeah, so they know that this, my parent is sharing my interests with me.
True.
So they have more to talk about. So what happens is that when they see that the small stuff is not taken for granted, you know, like small hobbies or things that they like, or remembering their favorite color, remembering their favorite dish and things like that, or what they like and discussing about it and giving a comment on that, that they know that, that the parents share their interests about the small stuff. So they will also resort to in the big matters.
Very like, true. You know? I think many teenagers go through this, that you know, nobody understands me and nobody really cares for me. And however much you go and tell them, no, we care. No,
yeah.
They have to see
that's
through action.
That's not enough. Yeah.
Yeah. So when parents actually show interest in what they're doing, not just for the sake of it, no, actual interest. And teenagers are very smart. Yeah, they know when the parents are just saying
yeah,
or actually
exactly, yeah.
feeling or doing something for yeah. the sake of that.
It's so nice that if a daughter is so much you know, like taken up with the interests of the parent. Like sometimes, you know, in creativity, a mother likes to stitch, so the child even feels that, you know, urge to
yeah.
want to explore that field and stitch and everything. So both can discuss so well on that matter, or cooking or anything, reading, for instance, or, you know, like matters that are like political matters of the day-to-day time, and they can discuss on that too, or a subject for that matter, for example, English literature, or literary subject like Nahjul Balagha,
yeah.
the eloquence of it, and you know, parents, or Quran, for instance. Parents can discuss so much with the children, you know, that really gives a big, you know, heart to the parents, especially. But, you know, however, we say that if the child has different interests, probe on those interests and see what the goodness comes out of it. And maybe here and there you can comment on that, and you can ask them, have you discovered this part of your interest, you know,
yeah.
and this part, this interest of yours has these kind of advantages, or what did you do about it? Maybe have you done anything new, you know, like
exactly.
for example, art is concerned. It's a very good, you know, like talent. But of course, it has to be like taken seriously and discussed about and shown interest.
Very true, very true. So let's just have a short break and we will continue shortly.
Ya muqiy al-khayrat, ya muqiy al-khayrat, ya muqiy al-khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
Welcome back, and we have been discussing about what to do to have a better relation with your teenage children especially. And Sister Selma has been telling us a lot about how to deal with that, you know, focus on their interests, show interest in their interests, and that will really build a bond.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you want to say more on that?
Yes. Another thing that I want to point out is avoid talking too much. Although we just discussed about how there should be a verbal interaction between the parent and the child, the teenager, that, you know, you have to know about their interests and everything. But here, avoid talking too much in the other times.
Yeah.
For example, however much you speak to an adult who's your age or something, try to, you know, hear out more from your teenager.
True.
In fact, even from your children, they have so much to let out, their energy and everything. And then you should lend the listening ear. And especially teenagers don't like you to advise them and to give a lecture, or, you know, like talking too much in the sense of giving them a lecture, or, you know, even telling them about your own things.
Yeah.
They like to be listened to. And in fact, this is a universal thing. Yeah. If you go and see, mostly people, when they're listened to actively, they really appreciate that more than when you give your opinions,
true,
right?
True.
Even a friend, even somebody who is a soulmate, your best friend.
Your husband.
Yeah, they listen to you, you would appreciate that more. So avoid talking too much and, you know, excessively also, and also questioning them. That why did you do this? Why don't you do this? Why did you, you know, you made your own mistakes? So judging them.
Yeah.
They would repel from that, and they would feel that, you know, just to turn a deaf ear on whatever we are saying. True. And they would not confide then. So to want to make a teenager talk to you is that try to talk less and listen more.
Yep. Showing that interest, showing that, you know, I'm here for you, and giving that full attention.
And also that you are supposed to talk more than me, right?
Yeah.
And then another thing is that admitting our mistakes. Sometimes when we make mistakes, we don't admit them, they pile up. When they pile up, the teenager feels that, you know, my mother is always in cross with me.
Yeah.
And she's always at loggerheads with me. So I can't relate to her. But if you admit your mistakes, then they know even how to admit their mistakes.
True.
They know that it's nothing wrong to do that. And that's why we have rights of a child also. Rights of a, and especially when it comes to adult child, like for example a teenager, is now has the right mind to decide between right and wrong. So he sees or she sees what's going on. And they don't like some things. So we shouldn't say that it's a child, he's my child, I have authority over them.
Yeah.
You know, although you have guidance and you share more authority, but you have no right to, for example, tease them or, you know, pass a comment that makes them feel hurt. So you should, like, even if you, for example, sometimes, you know, parents tend to joke about maybe the clothing style or the hairstyle. So the girl especially takes it very much at heart.
Yeah.
So this needs to be corrected before it's too late. So the parent should be sensitive enough to see what makes them feel bad, what makes them, you know, like comments that we talk to our friends about our girls when they are nearby.
Yeah.
So that we should be very careful and hypersensitive about it. That what makes our children feel bad, we should not, stake that with the
making
the relationship.
Yeah. I remember even when I was a child, if even though there was something very simple, very small, you know, it wasn't even very important. But as soon as my parents would, you know, joke about it, I would take it very much to heart. Like, I'd feel like they're disrespecting me when they had no intention whatsoever. And after that, I think because my mother made a bond with me, I was able to communicate that. And then she realized, okay, no, then we shouldn't bring these matters about. And alhamdulillah, that really, you know, put my self-esteem up, because otherwise it's very easy to get a low self-esteem from that young age if the parents, you know, joke about them or tease their children too much with a good heart. But it has its, you know, its stakes.
Yes.
As you said.
So last but not least, we should also, consider one point, and that's very important for all ages, not only teenagers, in fact, for adults as well. Is that you should remind them that you love them. And not just, you know, oh, just remember that I love you. No, it's concentrating on that, pointing out the qualities, what you like, what you appreciate. And also acknowledge the fact that, you know, you receive that love from them. So it's not just one-sided, it should be two-sided. Acknowledge it, yeah. That remind them that how important they are in your lives. Remind them all these things so that they can feel that, empowered. Because love is the only thing that really empowers a person.
True.
Yeah, they'll feel so much trust and satisfaction. And of course, they'll have a better relationship with the parents as life goes on. Mostly, if you go and see when teenagers grow up to be adults, they say they were not close with their parents. And it's really a sad thing, to hear that a girl is not close to her parent. Why? It's because there was this communication gap between them. But the parent has to remind that, remember, you are very important for me. You know, we think that it's just small children who need to be cuddled and loved and hugged, but it's also elder children.
Definitely.
They need to have that even probably more, because they shouldn't look for it outside. You know, they know that they have a very strong relationship with their, at least one of their parents. They know that they confide. They know that they can even embrace them and hug them and, you know, feel relaxed with them. So the parents should never refrain from that.
Very true, very true. So that was very, very insightful. And thank you very much for your valuable time, Sister Salma. And we hope to see you in the next episode. And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening. You've just listened to IRIB English Radio, where we had a discussion on child upbringing. And if you want to listen to our programs or get more information, you can log on to parstoday.ir/en under the tab COI. Call of Islam. And if you type in Call of Islam Radio, you can find it on YouTube and Instagram. And you can email us on englishradio@irib.ir. Inshallah, God bless you all.
Do you know what it- Islam says, it says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
Welcome to Israel Watch. On this episode, we will carefully monitor the disagreements within Netanyahu's administration and the repercussions that Benny Gantz's visit to the United States left behind, which were exacerbated by the resignations of officers in the Information Department and the Occupation Army. In addition, we will go over the failure of the truce negotiations and the captives exchange deal in light of the demands for Netanyahu's resignation and going to early elections. This is while the opinion polls have also favored Gantz over Netanyahu. Regarding these topics, I welcome the specialist in Israeli affairs, Mr. Ali Haider, with a warm welcome. So let's start from the battlefield, where the fighting in Khan Yunus has not ended yet. Hamas has not been eliminated, nor has the tunnels been destroyed, and the occupation army is still unable to achieve those two goals. Mr. Ali Haider, despite the destruction and massacres, there is an explicit admission that Khan Yunus and other areas of Gaza are still difficult for the occupation army. How will this be reflected on the reality of the occupation?
In the name of God, in fact, we're facing a field scene that constitutes a kind of impasse for the Israeli occupation. It cannot continue in the current situation as it is, in light of the continuation of operations every day in which Israelis are killed and wounded, and this constitutes a year of attrition for it. In the end, when all the occupation armies are subjected to continuous attrition, they take a step back. They will either advance forward or they will retreat backward. But the issue is bigger than that, considering that retreating without achieving the goals is tantamount to defeat for Israel. And the repercussions of this defeat in this region and at this stage are just greater than the fact that Israel is no longer able to stay in the Gaza Strip. In fact, its repercussions are strategic, especially since everything has started with the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. This story also has another side, which is the issue of the captives. So, will the Israelis leave? Will the captives issue be resolved, even partially? Or will a truce be reached? We're facing an intertwined scene, which includes field dimensions, political dimensions, complex internal dimensions, regional dimensions, and the international dimensions. Therefore, when many variables are available, the possibilities are multiplied and new possibilities open up. But they revolve around one axis. The Israelis have not been able to achieve their goals and do not seem to be able to achieve them anytime soon. Therefore, we're facing a new reality, awaiting what repercussions it'll have inside Israel.
And to the issue of the Zionist captives held by the resistance in Gaza, some of whom were killed and are being killed in the Israeli bombing and raids on the Gaza Strip, the Hebrew media has broadcast an audio of them pleading for help from the occupation soldiers before they were killed by a bullet. Mr. Ali Haider, in your opinion, how did this audio track affect the families of the Zionist captives in light of the accusations against Netanyahu of sacrificing their children for the benefit of his political future in order to remain in power by prolonging this aggression?
In fact, it is expected and it is natural that it will have a real shock, not only on the families of the two soldiers, but also on all the families of the captives and a certain segment of the Israeli public. But what is striking is that the majority of the Israeli public still supports the continuation of the war and the continuation of the war on the Gaza Strip, again, for the same reason, which is the failure to achieve the goals. Therefore, they cannot retreat and they face a great strategic danger that will escalate if they are not able to eradicate Hamas and the rest of the resistance factions in the Gaza Strip. In any case, the Israeli internal political scene may be more complex now. given that the divisions within the regime have increased after Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, the divisions that prevailed before it.
We will address this topic, but let us remain with the captives and with the families of the captives who are in agony because their children are getting killed at the hands of the occupation army. They've continued their protests, demanding Netanyahu's resignation and holding early elections. Mr. Ali Haider, in your opinion, what impact do these demonstrations have on Benjamin Netanyahu's decisions regarding the captives' exchange deal?
In fact, so far it has had an impact, but it is not very significant and has not yet been able to reach the stage of changing direction to the extent required. However, Netanyahu fears that this phenomenon will turn into a snowball that grows larger with the passing of time, especially since every shift in public opinion comes cumulatively and not suddenly all at once. There are issues that are reinforced by the failure in the field and reinforced by the enemy's failure to liberate Israeli captives. So Netanyahu may be dealing with them seriously. He's concerned with where these public protests will go. But so far, it seems that he is still adhering to his positions and relying on a solid social base that supports him in his choices.
The political divisions are deepening, and the failure in the war in Gaza has led to the resignation of officers in the Israeli Army Spokesman's Unit, which has raised many questions about its causes at a time when the aggression against the Gaza Strip continues without achieving the declared goals. So, Mr. Ali Haider, the scenes become more complicated when we look at the repercussions of these resignations among the high ranks of the Israeli Army Spokesman's Unit within the regime.
In fact, this phenomenon may have several dimensions, but it is not as imagined. Some may imagine that it will have repercussions at the political level, considering that it is a problem within the army institution. Indeed, it may benefit from it in some sense. Rather, its a problem is that it may have negative effects on the army and also the view of the Israeli public. With regard to the army in general, the phenomenon of resignations in this number, at this time, and in this war context, indicates that there is a fundamental defect that those concerned could not adapt to, even in light of the war context, and they were not able to ignore it. The problem may be greater than the same situation exists in other units, and it may be on the verge of explosion.
Will it have an effect in terms of the field?
In terms of the field, I do not think so. But it affects the confidence of the Israeli public in the army, and this will reveal later, especially since the issue is a matter of information. I mean, we are facing a situation that will reveal later the extent of the lies and deception practiced by the Israeli army towards its people regarding the real field losses and results. Therefore, this may be an indicator in this direction. Then if the results appear as they are in this area, they may have an impact on the political level and on the overall scene in the Israeli regime.
And to the political level, where there is no progress in the negotiations over the issue of the truce and the captives exchange deal. There is also no sign of an agreement that may occur before the advent of the holy month of Ramadan. So, Mr. Ali Haider, there's been no progress in the course of negotiations over the captives' exchange deal so far, but it seems that efforts are being made to achieve at least a partial or preliminary agreement before the blessed month of Ramadan.
In fact, we should not be surprised to hear about a stumble or a failure. This is normal and expected. Sometimes talking about negotiations going well does not mean that it is necessarily an indicator of optimism. We're facing a very complex issue that needs more time. Things become clearer as the time passes, and as a result of the pressure of the month of Ramadan, and also the exhaustion of the occupation forces in the field in the long term. Sooner or later, I am personally convinced this issue will be reached, but the question is at what cost? The problem is neither with Hamas nor with the Israelis regarding the issue of the captives exchange deal. Israelis are concerned with the captives that Hamas has got. They're worried that Hamas has not brought them into Gaza for feeding them, but for getting them killed on their own land. But here, the issue for him is the issue of the prices and the guarantees. The problem here is that the occupation does not agree to what Hamas demands, and this is quite normal. What is the way out? If the two sides insist on their own positions, the solution that is being worked on should include stages, and the problematic issues that may blow up in the negotiations should be postponed with the hope that this will lead to the liberation of about 40 Israeli captives in exchange for hundreds of Palestinian abductees, humanitarian aid, and so on, within a truce extending to several years. The Americans wanted to calm things down, considering that this will be reflected on the regional fronts as well. And this also gives the U.S. government time to exhaust the political process for the stage that follows this truce.
Benny Gantz travels to the United States at the invitation of American officials, and this constitutes a blow to Netanyahu, as one Israeli commentator has described it as the American finger in Netanyahu's eyes. The United States' motives for receiving Benny Gantz without Netanyahu's permission are an attempt to push something away from the current scene, which is Netanyahu. Mr. Ali Haider, what is the truth behind Washington's motives for receiving Benny Gantz without Netanyahu's permission and approval? In your opinion, is there any intention on the part of the Americans that indicates perhaps certain plans for amendments to Netanyahu's administrations?
Firstly, this step reflects the level of crisis the relationship between the two people, Biden and Netanyahu. Secondly, there are real divisions within the Netanyahu administration. Thirdly, it may be true that it is an indication that the Americans are showing a red card to Netanyahu, but more importantly, does this actually affect Netanyahu? Let us first observe if Gantz resigns from the administration with his partners. They do not affect the stability of the administration, because the administration, essentially, without them, is based on 64 Knesset members from the right-wing parties, and therefore it has more than half plus one, and it does not affect its stability and continuity. Secondly, its continuation may benefit Netanyahu, because then it'll appear to the Israeli right-wing public that it's standing up to American pressure in order not to give up Israeli interests. If the crisis affects the image of relations between America and Israel and the position of the Israeli public, it is natural, because the relationship between America and Israel is a relationship that even those who criticize it agree upon. Therefore, if this matter leaves an impact on the Israeli public opinion and contributes to the Israeli public's pressure on Netanyahu as a result of this matter, we will be facing another scene. In addition, if Biden takes measures to put real pressure on Israel, meaning reducing aid, for example, military, financial, etc., then we will be facing a different scene. But the tools that are being used regarding what they say about American pressure on Israel have so far been effective on Netanyahu, even though they may be useful to him in one way or another.
After all, the Americans are very frustrated with the Netanyahu administration, which is obstructing reaching a truce and a captives exchange deal in preparation for advancing the path of subjugation, according to the words of a former Israeli ambassador to the United States. Gantz leads Netanyahu in the latest opinion polls conducted in the regime, as the minister's party won 39 seats in the War Council compared to 17 won by the Likud party. And to the Israeli social media that reacted to the result of this opinion poll through sarcastic comments against Netanyahu. And here are some of them.
Or elections now.
Oren.
How delicious it is to hear that Likud is collapsing.
Angelini.
No one is worthy. Let them all quit and start again.
BN.
As a prime minister who has no qualifications and causes only harm, it is no wonder there are demands to replace him.
Limor.
Netanyahu, you must leave. Your place in history is the destruction of the temple.
Mr. Ali Haider, do you see a link between Gantz's visit to the United States and the opinion polls that reveal progress, meaning his lead over Netanyahu in any future elections?
There may be a link, but indirectly, in the sense that it is this shift in public opinion towards the person of Netanyahu that the Americans want to invest in and continue to put pressure on Netanyahu. But there is another side, that these polls in themselves constitute an incentive for all parties of the right-wing administration not to abandon each other and cling to the administration. Why? Because if the elections take place in light of such public opinion, then they will not see the administration in the future, and it'll be eliminated or a major blow will be dealt to their political ideological project with regard to the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Therefore, things are usually not one-dimensional. They're not either negative or positive. It is both negative and positive because the polls raise fears for Netanyahu and raise fears for those who are humbled by the issue of the conscription law. They may think, what if they resign and the administration falls? What happens to them in the elections? Even the same concerned parties within Israel do not know where things will go, especially in light of this dimension, in light of this bloc or very sharp social polarization. Yes, Gantz hopes that the elections will take place now in light of the polls, but the elections have a legal path, meaning that either the prime minister resigns and an alternative administration is not formed, or a number of members of the cabinet defect and join the opposition, or that there is a law that has a majority in the Knesset that dissolves the Knesset and the administration. And none of these scenarios are clear yet.
The specialist in Israeli affairs, Mr. Ali Haider, thank you so much for participating in this episode of Israel Watch, and thank you. Until we meet again, God willing.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa Allah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
July 12, 1983, place Hosseiniya Jamaran, Tehran. Subject: spiritual purification and focus on spirituality. Even you that praises a flower which praises an apple is praising Allah. The apple is nothing of its own. You that praises a perfect human being are in fact praising Allah. The human being is nothing, not even the prophets. The ultimate perfection of human beings has been to know that they are helpless, to understand that they are incapable of worshipping Allah.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. This is Zainab Mousavi, and what we do in this program is to talk about certain speeches and viewpoints of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, who was the great leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and then try to take some points and lessons out of these speeches and viewpoints in order for us to make use of them in our daily lives. Well, on the subject of mercy of Allah, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, "Don't be so overconfident of mercy that you neglect Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Nor should you despair and thus become one of those who has lost both this world and the hereafter." Well, here Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi is talking about the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to his servants, which is far more than the imagination of mankind. You know, hope is the expectation of a dear thing, the arrangements of which are already done, such as hope for the yield of a land after it was seeded, watered, and superintended. Although fear and hope support each other in disciplining the believers, hope is sweeter and fresher than fear, because its source is trust in God and the assurance of the extent of His mercy. To obey out of hope is better than obeying out of fear. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in His holy book, A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, O Muhammad, tell my servants who have committed injustice to themselves, do not despair of the mercy of Allah. Allah certainly forgives all sins. He is all-forgiving and all-merciful. Surah Az-Zumar, verse number 53.
يا ربنا صل على طه النبي وآله
صلى الله عليه
صل
يا رسول الله
The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, on the day of resurrection, Allah will gather the disputants of His mercy with their faces blackened. They will give the name of the despondents of Allah's mercy. Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam also said to the man who was prevailed by despair of God's mercy out of his many sins, you to despair of the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the greatest sin that you have ever committed. You know, the verse and these narrations represent the mercy of Allah to the sins of people and the danger of underestimating the help in Allah's mercy. Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, just in line with his holy ancestors, is advising us to have hope in what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has promised us and trust in His mercy. Thank you very much for listening to us. Until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. But I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio, for those who seek the truth.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad, praise be upon
I am Muslim for all of time. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Choo choo ka-choo, it's the youth station for you. I'm your humble co-host, Muzaffar Haider, and here in the studio we have with us the illustrious...
This is Asma. I am going to be here again in Youth Station with Brother Muzaffar, which is so much of a pleasure, of course. So, is there any problem in being old?
Huh? There's loads of problems in being old. Old age is terrifying. Your back aches, your bones ache, your teeth are falling out. Most of your friends who you knew back in the day and the people who cared about you are dead. You have to watch so many
of
your
God,
kids
that's so
going
depressing.
Astray.
No.
And, you know, then there's all this new technology and you just don't understand it, nor do you see the point of it, but everybody's going crazy over it. The amount of slang that now the youths are saying it, and I'm just like, why do we have to use these words? My dear young ones, why? Why can't we just, for example, in my day, yeah, if something was cool, mm-hmm. we'd say, oh, yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. You know what they say now, yeah? It's sick. Everything's sick. You know what that sounds like to me? Vomit. All right? Everything is just vomit.
Well, that depends on each age and era, you know? It's inevitable.
The other day, somebody sent me a skull emoji. A skull emoji, right? Yeah, and I'm just like, okay. I had to Google it. And apparently, you know what that means?
No, I'm not an emoji person.
See what I mean? That you're inside, you're an old lady. But yeah, it means that they're laughing themselves to death. Now, how am I supposed to know that?
Well, you know, in interaction you
In my day, it was fine. LOL, right?
It
means laughing out loud. Okay, that was acceptable. Now there's like this skull and this and that, and I'm just like, no, man.
That's life, you know? Things are not going to be stable forever.
Yeah,
They would change and evolution would happen.
Yeah, but it's de-evolution. People are evolving backwards.
It depends on how you look at it. According to them, it's evolution. According to us, it's going backwards.
Like, go look at my grandfather, for example. He was the strongest guy I've ever seen. Like, he would crack walnuts with his bare hands. He used to deal with snakes, like extracting the venom from snakes and stuff.
Oh,
and he
God,
used to just rip snakes apart with his bare hands. Like, literally, his forearms were like Popeye.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, we just sit at our desks and we're just like... I don't know, we're evolving into these weird creatures with spinal issues.
Well, I'm just telling you, that's time. Time's changing. And everything would change.
I applaud your words of wisdom, dear sister. I'm just ranting, okay? I'm allowed to rant.
It's okay.
Welcome to Youth Station.
We are all here.
We're fading away.
To listen to your naggings. Yeah. And stuff like that. So you have a lot of objections to the new generation.
No, I don't like young people.
Oh, why?
Being in positions of authority especially.
Oh, no, on the contrary.
You like
now,
young
Now, like, we have this election, and I have in mind to vote for people who are too young, rather than the people
That's
who are too old.
That's because you're young and naive, okay? Young people don't know what's happening, okay? They think they do. And that's the worst thing about the new generation.
Now, the grandfather inside of you is speaking.
Yeah, no, it's a reality, okay?
People are naive.
I will... You want to fight about this, sister?
Yeah.
I am prepared to fight, okay? There is a hadith of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Imam Ali, who had so much knowledge that, you know, the Holy Prophet opened for him 1,000 doors of knowledge, and every one of those doors had 1,000 more. Okay, he said, I would prefer to listen to the wise advice of an old man than to the kind of the courageous youthfulness of a young person.
Well, that's wisdom. There is no... See, we cannot just negate the idea that the old people have got such a wisdom to share.
Of course.
There's no doubt in that.
And therefore, they should be the leaders of a society.
No, therefore, we have to go for a break, and then we would have a discussion over that. Welcome Welcome back. This is Youth Station. Brother Muzaffar and I are speaking about, is there any problem in being old?
It's not said.
I see no bad in bringing the youngsters into the authority.
It's like a household, right?
Mm-hmm.
A household, the father should be the one in charge,
right? Yeah, the father has not started from an old age. The father, when he became a father, he was young.
Yeah, he started young, but at the same time, he's old enough to be the father, right? I'm saying that the child, if he starts saying, no, I think it should be like this, I think
that's different.
How is that different to
society? Very different. A child is totally naive. But when we're talking about youngsters with education, the youngsters with too much of ambition, the youngsters who aim to change the society, that's a different thing. They are fully aware of what they're doing. They have had enough of education. They have had enough of experience.
They haven't had enough experience.
The youngsters we're talking about are above 30. I don't call above 30 a naive person, a young, naive, and
okay, look,
not knowing what
we'll
they're doing.
Yeah, no, youth is anybody below the age of 40. Let's use that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Is that accurate?
Maybe. On your perspective. Anyway, the young that everybody calls young are about...
They're young for a reason. One of the reasons is they don't have experience. Even if they have the education, even if they have the will.
Okay, when they have to get that experience, if you don't let them get that experience, they must get into the practical world in order to get the experience. So
by looking to their elders and seeing what they do. So I'm not against internships or younger people shadowing older people and seeing how they work. And, you know, there's a subtle wisdom behind what older people do that younger people might not be aware of.
Of course, there is no doubt over that because they had more of time to have experience. But then what I'm saying is that as an authority and in the official jobs, I think it's better to open up a door for the youngsters to come up and seize those authorities and see what those youngsters are going to do. In our own country, I guess, whenever we trusted the youngsters, they did wonders. To listen to the old people, to the elder generation, is a good thing because, as you said, they're going to share a lot of wisdom, they have a lot of experiences, but then sometimes I myself get sick of all the old people we see in the official authorities.
Why?
Because that's enough.
That's enough of what?
That's enough of repetition. That's enough of it. I guess we have to just let some new blood to get in.
Uh-huh. Like what repetition of what?
See, everybody has got a strategy. Mm-hmm. And since we're talking about official jobs, like in authorities, it's going to turn into a political concept. For those political concepts, people have got their own standards, their own strategies. So maybe these young generations are going to come and change the entire perspective. Maybe they would do something, some new stuff that those old people cannot see.
All right, so you're saying we need a new strategy. And in order to have a new strategy, you need a person who's relatively new to the world.
Exactly. Fresh blood. I call that fresh blood. Sometimes, in order to change some stuff, I guess, we have to bring new generations in as well.
There's a hadith of the Prophet where he says that respect those who are older than you because they've done more a'mal than you. And respect those who are younger than you because they've committed less sins.
See, that's a good perspective. And
there's
even our
cons,
leader.
The thing is,
see, just if you listen to his presentations, he always focuses on the young generation. He always says that trust them, bring them into a practical realm of activities and give them a chance to prove themselves.
Okay, well, that's something I do have to agree with. The Ayatollah Imam Khamenei, the leader, he's talked a lot about and extensively about how youths need to enter the political and the practical fields and dimensions of society. And he has a lot of faith in them. I really love that.
Yeah.
But you see, I would argue that, okay, look, do you know the people of the cave, the youths of the cave in Surah Kaf?
Yeah.
Did you know that according to some tafsirs, They're actually like matured men.
Well, according to the film version.
But I think I've seen their faces. Yeah, you're
right. That was a very amazing film. Yeah. I recommend everybody to go and watch that.
Yeah, inshallah.
But then in that movie, they were not all old. They were just middlings. Like
middle-aged. Yeah, the thing is that they were, according to, that's what I'm saying, some of the tafsirs, the reason that they're referred to as the youths is not because of their age, but because of their attitude.
Your
attitude has to be young. And for example, if you take Imam Khamenei, the example that we just gave of the leader, he has a young attitude. And what I mean by a young attitude is not lacking foresight or lacking experience. I mean belief. I mean iman. I mean this energy that you bring to the table where you believe that things can change and you still have the will to change it. One of the problems that we face with older people, generally speaking, is that a lot of that pure faith and energy has died because they've seen so much. I'm starting to feel that as well, right? But you're just like, okay, it's not going to change. There's no hope here.
Yeah.
Right? You know, there's just nothing going to manifest. That's it. And then you just give up. Mm-hmm. That faith actually goes.
The same thing that I was saying. It's as if they've got accustomed to everything. As if you need something new. And then you would just go for the youngsters that maybe they would do the change everybody is looking forward in the society.
Have you seen The Matrix?
Yes, not entirely. Every time I just go to watch it.
You're familiar with the concept,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So one of the things they say in there is that they don't unplug anybody from the Matrix once they reach a certain age because the mind becomes too attached to that system. And so, yeah, it's like old age. It makes you too attached to the system, to this dunya. And after that, it's very, very difficult to disconnect. So I think it's not about being young or old physically. It's about the attitude.
Exactly.
The attitude needs to be young,
fresh. Now you're
talking. I was just teasing you at the beginning. I think it's to do with that.
Yeah.
So I can continue to tease you because I can bring it back to the point that you have a very old soul sister.
Oh. It's okay. I have no problem with it.
No, I'm joking. No, but this young attitude needs to be there. This liveliness.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Imam Khomeini, in his books, he says, look, how are you expecting your, for example, your salah or your a'mal to affect you if you're not believing that it's going to, you're going to be rewarded for it? Imagine if in your salah you believed that you're being showered with blessings. It would change your whole perspective.
Of course. But
an older person, I guess they've seen so many bad people praying. They've seen so many things in life. They're just like, oh, I'm just praying.
But then if they have that energy that you were talking about, the whole story would differ.
It would completely change.
Yeah.
I'll give you another example. So there was this old scholar, and he was so studious, like he would just study, like dedicated to Allah, proper studying, researching, reading. And he discovers an entire new library full of books. There was one problem, though. They were all in a foreign language, which he didn't know. And he starts, what do you think he does? He begins learning that new language. And one of his students
comes in. So he definitely is young at heart.
Yeah, he's still, you know, because he's studying for the sake of Allah. And that belief has to be there, really. And that's a lot to do with youth.
Of course, yeah.
Remember that it's not so much about being older or younger physically. It's about that feeling of youth that you need to have inside you. You need to be connected to your youthful side. That's all for today. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings, be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullah wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson. This is Palestine Declassified. We're the only weekly show that's dedicated to investigating and exposing the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In this week's show, we'll be exposing the activities of an Israeli lobby group operating in Spain, calling itself Action and Communication on the Middle East, which is usually referred to by its initials ACOM. On its LinkedIn page, ACOM describes itself as an independent organisation that aims to reinforce the political relationship between Spain and Israel by working with governments, political parties, the media and civil society. But Latifa Abu Chakra has been peering behind ACOM's benign veneer, where she discovered a rather different and sinister reality, as she'll explain in this report.
The former social rights minister in Spain, Ione Belarra, is one of the few European politicians who has been vocal from the outset in criticizing Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza. While she was still a minister in the Spanish government, she took to the streets in the aftermath of 7th of October, denouncing Israel's planned genocide in Gaza and calling for sanctions as well as a ban on arms sales to the Zionist regime. Belarra was quickly hailed for her heroism, but she also came under attack from Zionist lobby groups in Spain. ACOM, which stands for Action and Communication on the Middle East, is an ultra-right-wing Islamophobic Israel lobby group which engages in lawfare and defamation tactics against supporters of Palestine. The lobby group reported Belarra to the Spanish prosecutor's office for incitement to hatred, claiming that she had abused her position and had exceeded her right to freedom of expression. ACOM has a long history of trying to shut down free speech on Israel. In response to a boycott campaign which calls for apartheid-free spaces, which has seen shops and local authorities in Spain boycotting the Zionist regime, ACOM has taken dozens of legal cases to try to stop the boycott. One of their cases even reached the Spanish Supreme Court, which declared the boycott discriminatory. While Belarra's views are popular in Spain, she lost her job in the Spanish government following a reshuffle in late November 2023. Although it's likely that her dismissal was influenced by other factors. The Spanish Prime Minister, Pedro Sanchez, has himself been much more vocal than other European leaders in support of Palestine. Sanchez declared last November that Spain would soon recognize a Palestinian state. Sanchez also raised his concerns about the numbers of Palestinian children being killed and said that he seriously doubted whether Israel was complying with international humanitarian law. The Israel lobby's influence in Spain has been less powerful than in many European countries, and polling indicates that support for Palestine is strong in Spain. Early last year, for example, the mayor of Barcelona, Ada Colau, wrote to Benjamin Netanyahu to announce that the city was suspending relations with Israel due to its systematic violation of Palestinian human rights. Even the European Union Foreign Affairs Chief, Josep Borrell, who had a long career in Spanish politics and who once volunteered on an Israeli kibbutz, recently criticized Israel's allies for continuing to supply the Zionist regime with weapons. Despite this broader support for Palestine and Spain, Belarra has been unique in the strength of her criticism of Israel and has been at the forefront of highlighting the genocidal character of the Zionist onslaught on Gaza.
Joining me in the studio, as usual, is our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University and is now a non-resident senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch and is a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. Our guest today is Timothy Appleton, who joins us via Skype from Madrid. Tim is an author and political campaigner with a PhD in philosophy. He's currently a linguistics lecturer at Madrid's Camilo José Cela University. Welcome to the show. Tim, as we saw in our report there, Ioni Bilara has been an outspoken advocate for Palestine, hasn't she? I wonder whether you could just say a word or two about how that's been received by the Spanish public and indeed the political establishment for that matter.
Thanks for the invitation to speak, Chris. Good evening. Yes, the reception she's had by the Spanish political establishment has not been especially warm, although that's probably to do with the relationship between the political parties in Spain, which is quite a cantankerous relationship in general. But on the substance of the issue, she's not really speaking too far out of turn, because there's a lot of consensus for Palestine amongst ordinary Spanish people. There was a poll done by YouGov at the end of 2023 that found that essentially Spain was the most pro-Palestinian country in Western Europe in terms of public opinion. So this is a country where you pay a relatively low political price for speaking out for Palestine, I would say.
Mm. David, I wonder what you would say then that sort of distinguishes Spain from other European countries, particularly in relation to public opinion and indeed to government policy.
So as we just heard there, yes, I mean, public opinion is very strongly in favour of Palestine and critical of Zionism. But that's been the case in many other foreign policy issues. I mean, I remember when I first went to Spain, there was a referendum about whether they should leave NATO. And of course, that the kind of anti-militarism has been very strong. The anti-war movement against in relation to Iraq was very strong. And of course, we've seen cities like Barcelona and others declare that they're going to boycott Israel. So there's been a strong pro-Palestine sentiment in Spain for some considerable time. And of course, the Spanish is one of the only countries, one of the only two countries in Europe, which has actually decided to stop sending arms to Israel. Italy, of course, is the other one. Other countries, the Netherlands and Belgium, have done little things like stopped F-25 parts going, or there's a part of the Netherlands which is boy-